Chicago, and the ballet for a girl in Buchanan. Now, I've been talking about... I don't like to do this. I'd like to have told you all afternoon what was going to happen, but now that it's going to happen, why don't you just say hello?
Surprise, surprise. It's Dr. Winston O'Boogie at your service. I am Dennis's surprise, actually.
And he didn't come out of a cake or anything like that. John Lennon is with us, and we'll spend some time this afternoon to talk about the new album and a whole bunch of things, and maybe even do some disc jockeying.
Yeah, it's my second favorite occupation.
We'll get into some good music.
Okay. I'd like to play Whatever Gets You Through the Night from your new album. It's a single, and Elton John singing with you. Hello, folks. That was them singing together. And are we going to the news, or are we going to drop the news?
No, I think we'll listen to news later on today.
Okay, we know what happened, don't we?
Yeah. That's the single.
Yeah, and it's wild and rough. I call it Crippled Inside. You know, it's like releasing Crippled Inside from the Imagine album instead of Imagine. But I took a consensus of opinion. Because after I'd done it, I couldn't make a head and a tail of which one could be commercial, you know. So they told me that one, so here we go, and it seems to be doing all right.
Was the whole album done in New York?
Yeah, Record Plant. In fact, I've recorded everything since I left England in Record Plant. Oh, anybody listening to Record Plant, good gang there. And Al, what is it?
Carmine.
I keep calling him Al Carmine, sorry. He's just mixing it down to Quad because I couldn't face it again. I just arrived in L.A. and I got a note saying, we want a quad.
Uh-huh.
I said, are you kidding? I've just mixed the whole thing. He should have told me that first. But he's doing a good job for the 20 people who buy quad.
Well, you never... The cover is, for those of you who haven't had a chance to see it yet in your favorite record store.
Because it ain't out yet. It's this week.
It's not in the store?
Well, Richard, a friend of mine here that went down to get it the other day and they hadn't got it yet. I guess it'll be early next week. It'll be in the shops.
All right. Now, there's a drawing on the front.
You could call it that, yeah. Well, it's hard to explain, isn't it? Because it's all flapped over. A guy at Capitol designed it. It's a nice design.
The album comes in two parts.
Yeah.
It says John Lennon, June 52, age 11.
That's true. There's an exam they have in England that they hang over your head. You know, there's a couple of them, but one of them is called 11 Plus. And... they hang it over you from age 5. You know, if you don't pass the 11 plus, which you take at 11, obviously, then you're finished in life. So that was the only exam that I ever passed because I was terrified. And after that exam's over, the teacher says you can do whatever you want. So I just painted. And these are of all the childhood sort of drawings and paintings I did. This was the only ones that ever got saved. And I was originally going to use them for the Oldies But Goldies album with Spectre. But that sort of fell apart in the middle because of his accident and that. And the guide already started the design. So I said, oh, it'll fit the new album anyway, so use them. And there's three or four pictures that I did at that age.
And Walls and Bridges, what is that? Is it a prophetic title? Or?
I don't really know, you know. I mean, I get these things that sound nice, you know. I had the song number 9, Dream, was called Walls and Bridges. And, you know, I just had the title Walls and Bridges and I tried to fit it in anywhere like a jigsaw. So it didn't seem to fit any of the songs, and I hadn't written anything, so I just shoved it on as the album title. It seemed to be sort of wide enough to cover everything. It's like communication, you know, walls, four walls, bridges you go over. I think I heard it on a public service announcement on TV, you know, one of those late night things where they make you feel awful in between the movies, you know.
Number 9, Dream, was Walls and Bridges?
Was called Walls and Bridges. I mean, some of them have had 20 titles, you know. I change them all the time up to the last minute.
All right. Well, let's take a listen.
Okay.
Number 9 has no reference back to the old Number nine?
Well, yeah. Look, if you look at the cover, and those of you who don't have it, you'll get it. In June 1952, I've drawn four guys playing football, and number nine is the number on the guy's back. And that was pure coincidence. And I was born on the 9th of October, and that number nine Beatle thing was an engineer's voice, you know. And it just sort of seems to be my number, so I stick with it.
All right. It's just about 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so I need an official station break.
Okay, this is John Lennon with Dennis on WNEW-FM. And we're mucking about on a Saturday rainy afternoon because we've got you all trapped in your rooms, you see, because it's too wet to go anywhere.
We even have the 4 o'clock temperature reading.
We do? Oh, let's see how hot it is. Temperature is 68. No wonder I'm sweating. Humidity 93, PCT, whatever that is.
Percent.
Oh, why don't they do those little round things? Barometer 30.03 and falling. Oh, disgusting. Wind southeast, 8 miles an hour, cloudy. And somebody said it was the air was unacceptable today, but I accept it. Sounded all right to me.
That's the official forecast.
Here's the official WNEW weather forecast. Mostly cloudy with periods of rain this afternoon, tonight, and tomorrow. High times. Oh, no. Wish it was. High this afternoon and tomorrow in the 70s. Low tonight in the mid-60s. Watch out for it. That's about my period. Monday's outlook, fair and cool, man.
Okay. Metro Media Stereo at WNEW-FM in New York, John Lennon.
Ah, so there we are. That was some Gaelic words.
I'm trying to follow the lyrics in here. There's a lyric sheet, thank goodness, for the album.
Well, I print them even if I'm not pleased with them, you know, because I always tend to, on a few tracks, bury the voice.
There are drawings within the lyric book, too. Are those also from...
Yeah, same period. There's about one that isn't. There's a picture of a horse, I think I did about a year or something later, which is at the end.
Mm-hmm.
What they did was sort of jumble them up on the cover and then repeat some of them back inside.
It's not. I mean, the package is really nice.
Well, it's the first time since I was a Beatle, as it were, that I let the package out of my hands. I used to even make the cover, like on Mind Games. I handmade it, you know, and cut out little pictures. I enjoyed it. But I didn't really have time, you know.
Yeah, and you're...
So, and I'm glad, because I let it go, and the guy came up with something creative, and it's a surprise for me now. I can look at it and enjoy it without sort of, thinking, oh, I should have done this, should have done that.
You've got all kinds of friends, Jim Keltner, Jesse Ed Davis.
Yeah, Klaus Voormann, bass, Nicky Hopkins, piano, Ken Asher, keyboards, Arthur Jenkins, percussion, Bobby Keys, Howard Johnson, Eddie Motto on rhythm guitar, Bobby Keys, Howard Johnson, horns, Steve Madeo, and somebody called Frank, and somebody else, I'm not quite, Ron. I had a 5-piece horn section, which was weird. It was just the amount of people that turned up, you know.
All right, well, we'll be spending the rest of the afternoon with John Lennon in Metro Media Stereo, some commercials, and then more talk and music. Dennis Els is here at WNAW-FM.
Produced by George Martin. New music from the Mahavishnu Orchestra. Apocalypse on Columbia Records.
Don't miss the Mahavishnu Orchestra at Avery Fisher Hall, Wednesday, October the 2nd. The newest album is available at all Alexander record departments at $4.19. Not a bad price at all. Nice to hear George Martin's cooking, right?
Yeah. When was the last time you did work with him?
Abbey Road.
Have you seen him, do you?
I saw him in California, in the Beverly Hills Hotel in a bar. I went to see him, you know. And we got a little tiddly and had a little... discussion.
With the America album, the new one?
He's working on that too. I don't know what he's working. The last thing he was doing was he was talking of selling or had sold Air London, which is his recording set up in England, and buying a boat and putting it all on having a yacht. Yeah. Yeah. I said, can't wait, you know. Call me when you've got it, you know. If they can balance the tapes and not make it all fall in the water, it'd be great.
John has brought along a couple of records that he thought that all of us might be interested to hear. You know, more often than not, we do things on the air where we show you that one riff may have been borrowed from another record, an older record.
Yeah.
Maybe you could explain this one a bit.
Well, yeah, I brought four singles. This is one of them, oldies but goldies, as it were. This is a early 60s record by Bobby Parker called Watch Your Step, which I call Son of What Did I Say? I mean, there was the great record What Did I Say by Ray Charles, which is the first electric piano I ever heard on tape, because nobody could work out what it was on record. And then shortly after, maybe it could have been a year because it all blends in, but this was the next move after What Did I Say, which is Watch Your Step, the lick you recognize, because I've used it, or the Beatles have used it, sort of in various forms. Recently I heard, in this last year, the Allman Brothers used the lick straight as it was for some song, which is cool, you know. And here it is, it's one of my favorite records. We're on, are we?
Yeah. You know, I was mentioning to you off the air that the Yesterday and Today album, I always take the cover and I try and peel back.
To look for the dead babies. Yeah.
What? How did that happen, that album cover that never saw the light of day, or if it did, got pulled off very quickly?
It went out, we took the pictures in London at one of those photo sessions. By then we were really sort of, you know, beginning to hate it. A photo session was a big ordeal, and you know, you had to try and look normal, you know, and you didn't feel it. And the photographer was a bit of a surrealist, you know. And he brought along all these babies and pieces of meat and doctor's coats, so we really got into it, and that's how we felt, you know, yeah. So we sort of, I especially, pushed for it to be an album cover, you know, just to break the image, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it got out in America. And they printed, it's about 60,000 got out, and then there was some kind of fuss, as usual, and they were all sent back in or withdrawn, and they stuck that awful-looking picture which you have in front of you of us sitting looking just as deadbeat, but supposed to be happy-go-lucky foursome.
You look very unhappy.
Yeah, right, right. So we tried to, you know, do something different.
Album covers were much simpler then, right? Just
yeah,
a cover.
Yeah, you just walk in, take your photo, and walk out. You know? Mm-hmm. Especially in America, because we made only, say, 10 albums, actually. In America, there seemed to be 30 of them. And so we would design a cover or have control a bit more of our own covers in England. But America always had more albums, so they always needed another picture, another cover.
We used to be very upset because England would have 14 tracks per album,
yeah,
and then we'd only get 12.
Well, we used to say, why can't we put 14 out in America, you know, and stop them? Because we would sequence the albums how we thought they should sound, and we'd put a lot of work into the sequencing, too. And we almost got to not care what happened in America because it was always different. They wouldn't let us put 14 out. They said there was some rule or something that we... And
greed, I think.
Well, whatever it was, you know. They just... And so we almost didn't care what happened to the albums in America until we started coming over more and noticing, like, on the 8 tracks they'd have outtakes and mumbling on the beginning, which is interesting now, but it used to drive us crackers because we'd make an album and then they'd keep 2 from every album.
There was also, there was an album out on the VJ label, whoever was dealing the contracts at that time, before Capitol had Meet the Beatles.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, Introducing the Beatles came out in America on something that's called the VJ label, which doesn't exist anymore, though the album's still...
They had Love Me Do, I don't remember what else.
Well, it was re-released later, Capitol got the rights and then called it the Early Beatles.
I don't remember, I only remember Love Me Do, I think that was a VJ record.
We have also in front of us here the Beatles' second album.
That's what it's called here. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Electrifying Big Beat Performances by England's Paul McCartney, John Lennon, George Harrison, and Ringo Starr featuring She Loves You
and Roll Over
Beethoven. Yeah. You know, many of these things have been remixed, the stereo.
Oh, it was awful.
Yeah, I think the original Minoru recordings are...
I didn't realize it happened when they put out that package last year.
The blue and
the
red.
The two albums, and I just thought, presumed that they would just copy them from the masters and put them out. And I didn't even listen to it until after it was out, and I took it back and I played it. It was embarrassing, you know. I mean, some of the tracks survived, but it was really embarrassing. Some fool had tried to make it stereo, and it didn't work.
Yeah. People should stay with the mono and not be so concerned.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a difference between stereo and mono, obviously, and if you mix something in mono and then try and fake it.
Yeah.
It just you lose the guts of it, you know. And a lot of them lost the fast version of Revolution was destroyed, you know. I mean, it was a heavy record and then they made it into a piece of ice cream. But never mind, it's all the past, isn't it?
Well chosen words. We're at WNAWFM, Dennis Elsis with John Lennon, our guest this afternoon. And from the Beatles' second album, you said that there would be something to listen to carefully in the middle of this song.
When you presented the album to me, I noticed I Call Your Name, which A, was a song I wrote when I was about 16, except for the middle 8, which we did Scar. Now it's called Reggae. It was Bluebeat. It was a bit like rock and roll reggae. It went through different periods. It was Bluebeat, then it was Scar, and then it became Reggae. And this is our first attempt at sort of Jamaican, and it's in the middle 8.
Gone. If you like the ballet, you're going to love the Joffrey. And if you hate the ballet, you're still going to love the Joffrey.
Yeah, the Joffrey will be at City Center from October the 9th, happy birthday, John, through November the 3rd. The box office on 55th Street between 6th and 7th Avenue opens every day at 10 a.m. Reserve tickets on a major credit card by calling 489-6810. Don't miss it.
Hmm.
Yeah, my auntie used to like ballet, but she didn't like the men's crotch. She says, it's all right except for those terrible crotches. We're going to play Electric Light Orchestra from last year, Showdown, which I thought was a great record, and I was expecting it to be number one, but I don't think UA got their fingers out and pushed it. And it's a nice group. I call them Son of Beatles, although they're doing things that we never did, obviously. But I remember the statement they made when they first formed was to carry on from where the Beatles left off with Walrus, and they certainly did. Now, for those people who like to know where licks and things come from, which I do, because I'm always nicking little things myself, this is a beautiful combination of I Heard It Through the Grapevine by Marvin Gaye and Lightning Strikes Again, Lou Christie. And it's a beautiful job with a little Walrus underneath. We're having a break here. It's John Lennon and Dennis Washington on WNEW Metro Media Stereo, if you've got the equipment. Otherwise, it's on your cable TV, which is just as good, I always find myself. We're just looking through to see what else to play. Oh, we've got something lined up here, right?
Yeah. First, we got to do some commercials.
Oh, we've got to do some commercials. Oh, I love commercials.
The official, you know, you have to tell us what we
the official... Oh, that was Showdown, Electric Light Orchestra. That was the one before that one. And Grapevine was one of the parts of the inspiration for it by Marvin Gaye. ELO was on UA, and Marvin Gaye was on his own.
You've been producing.
Oh, yes, I've been producing.
I mean, there's your own album, the new one, Walls and Bridges, and then there's this one, this odd album.
This odd album by John Lennon and Harry Nilsson having a fit in L.A., yes. Well, I was in the middle of the Spectre album, which is, some of you will know what it is. I was making Oldies but Goldies album with Spectre, and he had a few car accidents, and that was the end of that for a bit.
Will it happen, that record?
I have 9 tracks, which Phil sent me 3 days before I went in the studio to make Walls and Bridges out soon. And so I couldn't do it. You know, I was waiting and waiting for months, and I was just sort of hanging around with Harry and Nielsen and people in L.A. and just getting into trouble. And whenever we got into trouble, it was my name in the paper. So I thought, you know, forget this. You know, every time we go out for the night, I end up in the paper. So, you know, I said to Harry one hangover morning, what are we doing, man? We're wasting our time here. We may as well put all this energy into work. And I knew he was going to make an album. I didn't feel like starting a new one because I had one half finished. I said, look, I'll produce you, which means I'll sit in the desk, behind the desk, and make sure they get the drums on, you know, and things like that, and keep them together as they take off. And we had a good time making it. We had a lot of friends in there playing. I won't go through the list again. Half of them are on my album, half of them on Ringo's, you know, the usual crew with a few added extras like Keith Moon. Some tracks are beautiful, some tracks are a bit weird, but Harry Nilsson and John Lennon together is a pretty weird combination.
Why the Goldies?
Because Harry, I don't know, you know, he wanted to do the certain tracks, you know, like he wanted to do Loop de Loop. He wanted to do Rock Around the Clock because he thought it would be good fun, and he said nobody's ever covered Rock Around the Clock. We opened Billboard, and there it is, 108 by Bill Haley. You know, while we're doing it, we were doing Save the Last Dance for Me, which he played me a tape of some of his songs he'd written, which there wasn't many, and also just a sort of demo tape of him singing Save the Last Dance for Me, and it was really beautiful, and it was like we did it on the album, only of course we orchestrated it and put a lot of other stuff on it. And it was just very nice the way he did it, and we were very excited doing it, and we liked the record. And then we looked in the charts, and there was DeFranco family,
yeah.
But it was not quite the same style. But so everything, as we were cutting it, we're looking, somebody had come in, and you say, somebody's just done that. So we thought, well, hell, we're doing them anyway. We enjoyed it, and some he picked, some I picked. But mainly they were his choice, and this is Save the Last Dance, which we both rather like. I hope you like it too.
A new album here from which
Splinter,
George, yeah, the new label. George is a Dark Horse.
Dark Horse, yeah.
What do you see?
It's a nice looking label, right?
Do you see the three of them?
I've seen Paul and George a lot, Paul and Ringo a lot this year, because they've been over here. Paul was here about a month ago, and I spent a couple of Beaujolais evenings with him, reminiscing about when we were only 38. And Ringo I've seen a lot of, because he's been over here recording. I was just down, in the middle of my album, I just took a break and went down and did a track I'd written for Ringo on his new album. And then I went to Caribou and sang Lucy in the Sky with Elton John, and then came back and finished my album off. So, and Paul and Ringo, yeah, George I haven't seen, but he's coming over in October to rehearse. So I'll go and see him then.
Relationships are cordial.
Oh, very warm, warm. Very warm, my dear.
All right.
Are they getting together?
Yes, are they getting together?
Well, we'd have to be on Dark Horse label the way things are going. We never talk about it because, A, the four of us have never got into a room together because of green cards and immigration and all that jazz. George and Paul have a little trouble getting in and out of this country, too. And so the four of us have never sat in a room together for 3 years, although we've managed to get three together in one room. That was Paul, Ringo and me. That was sometime in the summer, in the middle of Harry's album, actually. And so there's always, you know, if you say no, it's a negative. They all hate each other. If you say yes, it's rolling crawdaddy. Cream says they're getting together, you know, or Harry's bringing them together or something. There's always a chance we'd work together because, you know, if we see each other, we tend to fall into that kind of mood. But I can't see us touring or anything like that. We've never discussed it. I could see us making records. You know, why not? But that touring bit, I don't quite fancy that myself.
There's no definitive plans for an album,
though. No. We're more liable to be inclined to work together in 76 when the contract comes up. I mean, to be very commercial about it. I mean, we'd be stupid to give away anything new at the rate we get paid now. We're going to play some Splinter, which is a group George has just produced. I haven't heard the album. I just heard a bit on your radio station the other day, on cable TV, actually. And the singer, Bill Elliott, I used on a sort of, not a charity record, but a record that I made for an underground paper in England called Oz, and they were having a lot of hassles in court. And Bill Elliott was one of the singers. He sang something, whatever it was, God Save Oz. And here's the first track from side one on the Splinter album. And we'll see. It sounded like George on the radio last night. Ago when we played these records, but we'll tell you what was happening hours ago, because if you're like me, you wait and wait to hear what it was. You know, why don't they tell you what it is? A few hours ago, oh, it's not this list up there. No, oh, it's not that bad. Gravy Train. Was that? The writing is amazing, Dennis. Gravy Train by Splinter on Dark Horse, brackets A&M, which was George Harrison's production of Splinter. Sounds pretty good, too. I'm the Greatest, we heard, you probably recognize that, Ringo on Apple, which is the song I wrote for him, and sang along with him. It should have been a single, I always said. They wouldn't even give me the B-side. Next time I'll get it. And then we went to Walls and Bridges, which happens to be my new album, and I'm Dr. Winston O'Boogie, otherwise known as John Lennon. And that was What You Got. The guitar lick was inspired, should we say, by Money, 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 by the OJs, was it? Yeah. But of course, you'd never recognize it now. And that's on Apple or Capitol, and it's available at all those record stores that I keep mentioning.
We need it. It's just a minute past 5 o'clock, so we need an official... And you have to give the FM after the WNEW, and you have to give the city.
The city? Well, right. We know which city we're in.
No, but in case someone from...
Okay, and you do Metro Media before the or after?
Well, that's not legal. You can just throw that in.
Okay, this is... I keep getting your last name lost in my head. Dennis will do, will it? Okay, this is John Lennon with Dennis Schlitten on Metro Media Radio on WNEW-FM, New York City. It also comes through on Sterling Cable Manhattan TV on Channel N and Channel 3. And it's very good, you know? They don't even know it themselves. I've been talking to the people here, they don't know it. Well, are we going to play this record now? Or what?
No, we have to do commercial.
Oh, well, here's a nice little commercial. I'll have a whopper if it's a whopper.
Vinsky, The Rite of Spring on Columbia Records.
Yeah, Boulle, folks, listen to this. Play Cart C1. Pierre Boulez's album, The Rites of Spring, spelled R-I-G-H-T-S, very subtle, is available at a special low price. No wonder, I tell myself. At all Corvette stores for only $3.87. Or you could get my album instead, but that's a matter of choice. Tonight at the Joint in the Woods, guess who's there? It's ladies' night. They won't like that. Woman's night. Featuring the exciting 8-piece... all-female group, ISIS or Isis, depending where you come from. All females admitted at half price. Oh, good. Well, Bowie can get in. Also, dance and party with Lock, Stock and Barrel. That probably is a group because it's in inverted commas. Coming next Wednesday, October the 2nd, to the Joint in the Woods. Nothing like a joint in the woods, he says, losing his green card possibilities in one blow. T-Rex on Friday. Now, that's a good band. Now, he's by a couple of his records. He's getting fat with worry. On Friday, October the 4th, Martha Reeves. She's great. And Saturday, October the 5th, Buzzy Linhart. She's great, too. For more information, call, get your little pencils ready, 201-335-9800. 9800. Joint in the Woods. Parsippany.
Yes.
Got it this time.
Done.
Yeah. Sounds like a group. New Jersey. Where the stars shine. All right. We're not going to bother with the weather. Just look out of the window. Oh, you want the weather?
It's
the degrees have changed. Oh, this is a nice degree. The temperature's 69. Get it? Yeah. Humidity is 90%. Number 9. That's all right. Barometer 30.013. That's another 9. Inches and falling. Inches and falling. That sounds like a song. Wind southeast at 6. See, it's all 6 and 9s. Very deep, man, very deep. The weather in Central Park is still there. And it's cloudy. Okay, that was UPI. We're only giving you one version of the weather, so you don't get confused.
Ah, yes.
Are we going back to my favorite...
We are, just so everyone can tune in properly, at 102.7.
102.7, in case you're not quite on the dial there, otherwise you get that terrible hissy treble jazz.
John Lennon is our guest.
Yes, he is.
Or maybe it's the other way around.
Well, it depends which... No, I think I'm the guest, because I'm sitting behind the thing. Although I do have the sweeties and the...
But you brought the records along.
I brought 4 only. I didn't know how you'd take it. I nearly brought 100, but, you know... I forget to play my own album. I'm so busy playing these old... American record that nobody I know over here seems to have ever heard of it. And it's called Some Other Guy by Ritchie Barrett. There is a strange bootlegs of the Beatles singing it rather crappily from the cabin somewhere way back in 61. This is another what I call Son of What Did I Say, Son of Watch Your Step, Son of Lick Records, and this is a guy called Ritchie Barrett, who's also a songwriter. I think he's still around, but I don't know what he's doing. This is Some Other Guy. You'll notice the intro is slightly like Instant Karma. Every band in the world, are we on? No, yes, mm-hmm. Every band in the world used to do that song. That was an album version. It wasn't the original single, which, as far as I know, was the first electric piano on record that I ever heard. And What Did I Say is seemed to be the start of all the guitar lick records, because none of us had electric pianos, so we all did it on guitar to try and get that low sound. And before that, everything was mainly licks, like you get on the Little Richard rock and roll records, like Lucille licks, where the sax section and the guitar played it. And What Did I Say started a whole ball game, which is still going now. That's all I got to say about that. Dennis Elsis, you see, I got his last name from Roberta. You're listening to Roberta? She's making chocolate pudding, and I'm starving. All right.
We are in Metro Media Stereo, WNAWFM, and with John Lennon. In 1963 and 4 and 5, when the Stones were the group that was coming up hard and strong behind the Beatles, were you all friends?
Yeah, we went to see them at, I believe the place was called Crawdaddy in Richmond, and also, I think, another place in London. And they were run by a different guy then, Giorgio Gomelsky, who also discovered, brackets, you know, quotes, the, what's that group everybody goes for that Jeff Beck was in? I can't remember the name. One of those mid-60s English groups, anyway, which I never thought were much cop except for Jeff Beck. One of those groups, everybody went through the...
Yardbirds,
that was it, Son of Stones, but they never really had a singer, you know, or a performer. And immediately we started hanging around London. The Stones were just up and coming in the clubs then, and we knew Giorgio through Epstein, and we went down and saw them and became good friends. And the story on how this song we're going to play, I Want to Be Your Man, which we virtually finished off in front of them because they needed a record. They'd put out Come On by Chuck Berry and they needed a quick follow-up. And we went down. We met Andrew Oldham, who used to work for us, or used to work for Epstein, and he'd then gone with the Stones and probably got them off Giorgio Gomelsky. And he came to us and said, have you got a song for him? We said, sure. You know, and we thought, because we didn't really want it ourselves, which is one way of putting it. We went in, and I remember teaching it to him, you know. And the whole story of it, which helped my memory of it, because it all fades away, is in that book on Mick, which Mick's not keen on. I understand that, but...
Tony Scaduto book?
Yeah. But it's all right for people who they're not writing about those books. You know, if it was about me, I wouldn't like it probably either. But I must say, I race through it for all the juicy bits like everybody else, right? And it's very interesting. I don't think it really harms him, you know. It shows that he knows what he's doing, which is cool. I don't think he did anything to Brian Jones either. So here's I Want to Be Your Man by the Stones themselves.
That's the only one that the two groups ever did.
Yeah, the only records we covered, I mean, that we both did the same. Yeah, they did it first. We did it with Ringo after. And that was it. That was the Stones' second single. I don't know what happened over here, but in England it was.
You're still in touch with them and you speak with them?
Yeah, I see. I know Mick's around now. I haven't seen him this trip, but last time I saw him was L.A. In fact, we were jamming together down in Record Plant West, and we made quite a good track. I was so-called producing it, meaning sitting behind the desk. And
Was there ever talk then, or is there talk now, of the groups getting together and doing something?
We never talked about it, because in the early days we just had our own careers to look after, and we hung around in two separate periods. One was when they were initially still playing in the clubs. I remember the first thing one of the members, Brian Jones, came over and said, "Are you playing a harmonica or a harp on Love Me Do?" Because he didn't know how, he knew I got this bottom note. And he suspected I said a harmonica, you know, with a button, which wasn't real funky blues, you know, if you're supposed, but you couldn't get Hey Baby licks on a blues harp. And we were also doing Hey Baby by Bruce Chanel at that time. And then the later period is when we were both sort of riding high, and there was a discotheque scene in London, and the main club we all went to was the Ad Lib. There was a couple more, but they were never as big, Bag of Nails. But we used to just go in there and dance and talk music and generally get drunk and stoned and high. And one of the records we always played was in the Ad Lib itself, folks, with all of us sitting there listening and dancing, looking super stoned. And the record was called Daddy Rolling Stone by Derek Martin, which The Who later did a sort of version of, like the English usually do of these great records. Not too good, that's including us.
This was an American record?
Oh yeah, another great American record. That's all we ever played, American records. There's no such thing as English records those days. So here's Daddy Rolling Stone, Derek Martin on Sue Records, about 63 probably. Don't you? I love them things.
Derek,
I'm 5 pounds overweight and I want a Whopper, isn't that
Derek right? Martin.
Yeah, Derek with a D-E-R-E-K. Daddy Rolling Stone. Now you heard the real one for all you Who freaks.
All right. Station break and commercials is what's next.
Okay, this is WNEW-FM, New York City, New York. 105, 102.5. No, 10 which is it? Well, if you're listening, you're tuned in. That's the main thing.
102.7.
102.7. I just turn it around till I hear what they say. And here's a nice Whopper commercial.
Duran?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, there's no... That goes for L.A., Frisco, anywhere. I think people are a bit cooler in New York. And I've been here 3 years, and people sort of will wave or something, or a taxi driver will say, you know, are you still here? Or whatever, good luck and all that jazz about immigration.
Can we...
Yes, we can.
Yeah. What about all that?
And so, anyway, I do get... One of my biggest kicks is just going out to eat or going to the movies, you know, and doing things I couldn't do when I was, you know, in the middle of the Beatles stuff. And I really get off on that. And people, occasionally people ask for autograph or just want to shake hands is the coolest one that happens, which is cool with me. And I'm just known enough to keep my ego floating, but unknown enough to get around, which is nice.
You like New York?
I love it, you know, and that's why I'm fighting so much to stay here, so as I can be in New York, you know. Maybe they could just ban me from Ohio or something. You know, nothing against Ohio. But
what's the status? I mean, we saw photographs of you walking in and out of court buildings.
With my suit on.
Yes, you look very nice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, every now and then, this is the way, as it appears to me, which is virtually like it appears to the public, because I don't follow it in detail unless the lawyer calls me, Leon Wiles, nice guy. Every now and then, I suddenly hear that I've got 30 days to get out of the country. Last time I was on the way to Record Plant, I was in a taxi, and the radio was on. I just heard it announced over the radio. So, being jocular, I said, drive me to the airport, Sam. And we were laughing about that. And apparently my lawyers hadn't told me because they didn't want to depress me in the middle of the album. But I got it over the airwaves instead. And they say, you've got 30 days to get out. And then my lawyer appeals it, and that gives me another 6 months or something like that. And it goes round and round in circles. The last time I was in court was... I think the government had taken me to court for something or other, and our plea was, could we interview the prosecution counsel that had originally been the government's prosecution counsel and the head of immigration? Could we have them on the stand, you know, to examine them or whatever? But we were not granted that, you know, so we're not allowed to talk to their ex-lawyer, who's a nice guy and a straight guy, and he'd probably tell us the truth, you know. So somebody doesn't want us to interview them. But I seem to be still here, and I don't have any intentions of going. And I'd like to thank all the people that write to me, and because I don't usually answer, because I have no answer, you know, about how they can help. But one thing that does help, I think, A, the fact that you write to me is helpful, because it cheers me up when I think about it. And the other thing is, if you just write to your local senator or congressman, that keeps them it keeps the thing in their minds, and it isn't like, oh, he's already gone, what happened? Because senators and congressmen are a bit like advertisers. If they get a letter from one person, they reckon it represents 50 or 100. And it just reminds them, when they're sitting over their cigars somewhere and the case occasionally comes up, they might think, oh, well, yeah, you know, my constituents wrote me a letter about that. So that's about the only way you could help.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was sad when Charlie Chaplin finally came back to America.
That's what I don't want to happen to me.
All those years,
you know.
Gosh.
I'd hate that, you know, they wheel me on at 60 and give me a plaque for yesterday, and Paul wrote it, you know. I mean, I can just see it, you know. I don't want that. I'd like to live here, you know. I don't harm anybody. I've got a bit of a loud mouth, that's about all, you know. And I make a lot of music, and that's what... Mainly I do. I'm either making music, watching TV, or listening to the radio. And occasionally I get into a little spot of trouble, but nothing that's going to bring the country to pieces.
No, certainly
and,
not.
And I think there's certainly room for an odd Lennon or two here.
I agree. I know everyone out there does, too. We're sitting with the new album in Metro Media Stereo at WNEW-FM. John Lennon here. And this is a track called...
Oh, this is a track called Scared, which means that the moment I was writing it, that's how I felt. But now I'm quite happy, thank you. dat was scared.
Scared?
Scared, yeah.
From Walls and Bridges.
Out soon or out now at all those record stores mentioned. Come on, Goody, put it in the window now. Well, let's not forget Harry Nielsen's Pussycats.
Let's hope so. Some commercials?
Yeah, why? You're going to put your own commercial on, aren't you?
I
must
think
be
so.
Funny putting your own. Well, it's like me here plugging my own records, right?
Hold on.
If you were wondering what happened to happy music, then take a listen for the next 60 seconds to Felix Cavalieri. Felix Cavalieri. If he sounds familiar, then maybe you remember when Felix was a leading member of the Rascals, writing and singing all that good loving music. Now in his first solo album, which he co-produced with Todd Rundgren, the magic continues. Felix Cavalieri by Felix Cavalieri on Bearsville Records and Tapes.
Yeah, Felix Cavalieri's new album is available at all Sam Goody music stores. $4.19 for the album, $5.69 for the tape, produced by Todd Rundgren, who's great. Good old Todd. Also, Felix worked with my engineer in the early days, Roy Sicala, from Record Plant. Mm-hmm. It's all in the family, isn't it?
Gonna do another commercial.
Oh, goody.
Since 1921, White Castle.
Ah, we on?
Yes.
Yeah,
sir.
Okay. All 29 White Castles in the New York, New Jersey area are open 24 hours a day. Locations are Roosevelt Avenue and 69th Street, in Woodside, Rockaway Boulevard and 97th Street, in Ozone Park and at Norton Boulevard and 88th Street in Jackson Heights. And if you can't make it to there, you go to my friend Richard's restaurant called Home on, I've forgotten the name of the avenue, Richard. 91st and 2nd, and they rock like hell in there. So they're going to kill me, but what the hell.
It's a nice place.
It is a nice place, yeah, and they play good music.
This is...
And thank you, King Carol, for putting Harry in the window. I'm getting them all in. Hello, Mother, Father, Auntie Joyce.
It's very odd for me to be sitting here in a way. I guess it's odd for you to be sitting here, too, in a way. Because, you know, 10 years ago, I was just a Beatle freak sitting there taping you off the Ed Sullivan Show and
just a Beatle
and
freak.
Buying the records
no.
and so on and
now
so
you get them
forth.
Free.
That's true. And sitting here and does it make sense to you to have been so important and to be so important to so many people and to have been a member of a group that changed hairstyles and clothing and does all of that make any sense at all? Can you deal with that enormous?
Well, I have to deal with it because you know I was in it, you know. When I look back on it, it's sort of vaguely astounding, you know, the fact that I was in there. But when you're in it, we always call it the eye of the hurricane, you know. It was calmer right in the middle than it was on the peripherals. And what was the rest of it you said? Because you got me onto that Chuck Berry thing, right?
Yeah,
that's what
I
we were talking about before.
Yeah, I wondered, you know, because I sit here... now as a disc jockey playing the record and interviewing John Lennon as a guest on the program, but 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3-4 years ago, this would have been the most unlikely thing in the world to me, and I find it wonderful and ironic and very weird at the same time that it would happen this way.
Well, I guess I understand your point because I was doing a radio thing on the phone with a radio station somewhere. I don't know where, I can't remember where it was, and the guy was talking the same way, you know, so it was strange because he'd been 16 in the middle of all the Beatlemania, and there I was on the phone mumbling, you know, and he put it well. He said it was like when he saw me on Mike Douglas' show, the way I was acting towards Chuck Berry, because although I was there with Chuck Berry and I'd been sitting backstage with him, I met him a few times over the years, I still had that feeling that when I was 16, those are the records I listened to at what we call milk bars in England, of the jukebox, and I could never quite see him as a human because there was one of my idols actually talking to me. And I understood when I used to order, you know, a steak and something and the waiter just didn't hear me because he was too busy looking at me saying, it talks, you know, it talks. So I understand it in a way because if I see any of those people from that period of my life when I was 16, I really don't know quite if I'm all there when I'm talking to them. You know? It's a sort of effort to see, oh, yeah, it's a human being, but it is Chuck Berry, isn't it?
It's very nice to know that it's a human being. I mean, it's delightful to feel as comfortable as you've made me the last hour and a half
or
so.
Well, vice versa, because this is your territory, not mine, you know.
I'm glad you came up, too, because, you know, you've been in New York 3-4 years, and we've played the records, and it's a delight to finally have you come down and say hi, and I do hope that you'll come back again, too.
Well, you know, I you can see I'm enjoying it. I wish I'd brought more of my oldies, but I thought I wouldn't want to flood all these young glitter kids with oldie records from the 60s, but I really do enjoy it, and I always felt a bit more strange about doing radio in New York because I began to feel as though it was my hometown. And it's like almost putting on an act to go on the radio. I did a lot of TV in the early days I was here, but that was different. TV's big and it goes everywhere and it really is a show in a way. But I tend to felt as though I could do radio easier in, say, LA or Frisco, where it was like being in a foreign country almost. But here I feel as though, well, the people know me. They see me on the street. I've been almost in every cab in New York. You know, it's strange to be sort of talking through a microphone to people. But I do enjoy it. And as you know, I've told you that, I listen to your station because they've always been good to me and my friends and the music. And as I said before, it comes through the cable TV and I'm a TV freak. So there you are playing the stuff. And I thought, I always meant to come down, but I always think, well, what do you do? I'm John Lennon, I'm coming down to play record. You know, you feel such a fool. But here I am, and I'd talked to Elton John, who's a good friend, and he does it, and, you know, I thought, well, he is the big one now, you know, I mean, there's not many bigger than him at the moment, and he feels comfortable, he enjoys himself, he told me he had a good time, and he sort of almost turned me on to doing this kind of thing again. In the Beatle days when you were a kid, we were so overawed by American radio, Epstein, our manager, had to stop us. We phoned every radio in town just saying, will you play the Ronettes doing this? I mean, we want to hear the music. We didn't ask for our own records, we asked for other people.
I know there was a historic afternoon which you spent in a hotel room with Scott Muni, one of the few people to...
Hello, Scott, if you're listening.
...to make that transition from being then one of the king of the top 40 people and now runs this station. He's the boss and he's on in the afternoon, and he of course was that old station, the old call letters, but they took the B and made it Beatle C.
I remember those days. It was good, and I didn't see Scott today because he wasn't here, but maybe next time I come I can sit around with Scott for a bit. You know, he's a good lad. It's nice to meet the ones who've been around, you know, because it's like we all went through it together. You asked me before about how did I assimilate it. And, you know, that bit about we changed everybody's hairstyles, but something influenced us, whatever's in the air, to do it, you know? And pinpointing who did what first, you know, is doesn't really work. We were part of whatever the 60s was, and we were like the ones that were chosen to represent whatever was going on the street. It was happening itself, you know. It could have been somebody else, but it wasn't. It was us and the Stones and people like that. And here we all are, you know, and we all went through it together. And now we're going to play a track from Magical Mystery Tour, which is one of my favorite albums because it was so weird. And it's I Am the Walrus. It's also one of my favorite tracks because I did it, of course, but also because it's one of those that has enough little biddies going to keep you interested even 100 years later. And this is for the ELO freaks.
Yeah. Mistress, I'll find stuff I bring to Edmund Earl of Gloucester. Keep your mouth upon that English castle. Oh, I'm tired of it.
Know what they're saying at the end there?
No.
Everybody's got one. Everybody's got one.
What's King Lear? There's a bit of King Lear at the end of that, too.
Yeah, that was live radio coming from the BBC, though they never knew it. When I was mixing the record, I just had a radio in the room that was tuned to some BBC channel all the time, and we did about, I don't know, half a dozen mixes, and I just used whatever was coming through at the time. I never knew it was King Lear until years later somebody told me, because I could hardly make out what he was saying. But I just sort of, it was interesting to mix the whole thing with a live radio coming through it. So that's the secret of that one.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I had no idea that that's how it was done. You're talking about secrets. How much of Revolution Number 9, John, from the White Album, how much of that was accidental, if any?
Well, it's like an action painting. The Revolution Number 9 is the weird one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of loops, tape loops, which is just a circle of tape, if people don't understand it, it repeats itself over and over. I had about 10 of them on different mono machines, all spinning at once with pencils and things holding them. I had a basic track, which was the end of the Revolution song, where we'd gone on and on and on and on. And I just played it sort of live into another tape and just brought them in on faders, like you do as a DJ, and brought them in like that. And it was accidental in that way. I think I did it twice, maybe, and the second one was the take. And the number nine was an engineer's voice. You know, they have test tapes to see that the tapes are all right,
mm-hmm.
and the voice was saying, "This is number nine megacycles." So he was talking like that, and I just liked the way he said number nine. So I just made a loop of him saying number nine and brought that in whenever I felt like it. And 9th of October, I'll be 105, and nine seems to be my number. And it's the highest number in the universe. After that, you go back to one.
Yeah, we're playing underneath, sneaking it up here, a little bit of beef jerky.
Beef jerky, yes. I like this one because I don't sing and I can stand listening to it without hearing my voice.
This is from the new album.
From the new album, Walls of Bridges, available somewhere, and you can find it if you want it.
All right. I just need an introduction to the 6 o'clock news, which is 30 seconds away.
In 30 seconds, you will hear the doomsday voice of the 6 o'clock news telling you what happened 24 hours ago, because they never know exactly what's going on at this minute.
And I hope you'll come back soon.
I'll be back someday. Who knows when? Only the shadow knows.
This is Dennis Elsis thanking John Lennon at WNAW-FM in New York.
Thank you, Dennis.
Good night, Dennis. Good night, John. And good evening, everybody.